Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and thanks so much for your calls to our pledge drive on all this, All the Money in Half the Time Monday. We are almost there, so we will have most or all of this hour pledge-free. Woohoo! We are just $1,000 from our goal of $140,000 for the morning. So we're going to hope to take it for granted that there are going to be, let's say, 10 more of you who do call and make your pledge of support for this year. Average pledge $100, that would be about 10 more calls. So hopefully you'll be one of those 10 people. And we'll wrap it up right here. Thank you all for your support for WNYC. It's really been a wonderfully efficient morning where so many of you called during the morning shows, really. So thank you, Morning Edition listeners, Takeaway listeners, BBC listeners, for making this so easy on us today. Just another handful of calls, and we will have met that All the Money in Half the Time goal of $140,000 for today to run the radio station. And that means we can do the rest of this show and all of the Leonard Lopate show and the entire rest of the day pledge-free before we come back and wrap up the winter pledge drive tomorrow and on Wednesday. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you for calling 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. We really, really appreciate it, and we try to earn that support every day. And we've got a good pledge-free hour planned, which we can now savor even more. In just a minute, we will meet a Libyan American working for democracy in her country, really her parents' country of origin, who happens to work here at WNYC. And then the New York Times executive editor, the guy in charge, Bill Keller. We will talk about the Times and about the world. He's got a great, I call it a moral appreciation, in the Sunday magazine about leaders who give up power gracefully, unlike the one we're about to talk about. And we'll continue our series on the national science test questions that American kids can't answer with none other than Bill Nye, the science guy. Bill Nye, later this hour, answering some test questions and some that you send in. So a lot to stay with us for in this pledge-free Brian Lehrer Show hour here on WNYC. And with the current stranglehold on information going in and out of Libya, gathering information from sources on the ground is not easy. Well, Sarah Abdurrahman is a producer for WNYC's On the Media, and she joins us now not in that role, but as a Libyan-American who has been working to get information out of her family's homeland. She's been posting what she has gathered from people in Libya to the Twitter feed at Feb 17 Voices, Feb 17 for February 17th, and we'll explain that at Feb 17 Voices. She's here to tell us about her work over these last few weeks. Sarah, welcome. I can't say welcome to WNYC because you work about 4 feet from me.
Thank you. Welcome
to the air.
Thank you for bringing me on.
And first of all, tell us about how you came to live in New York, because there isn't that much of a Libyan community here. So just so our listeners get to know you a little bit, I know your family is part of what's called the dissident diaspora.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I was born and raised in the States. Actually lived in upstate New York when I was briefly as a child. And I live in New York now because of my work here at WNYC. There isn't a huge Libyan population in New York, but there are definitely some out there.
So your father and members of your family of his generation were part of the dissident movement decades ago. And, of course, Gaddafi's been in power 40 years. Tell me, how were they involved?
Well, my father and a lot of the fathers of my friends in this country and my husband's father were all involved in the opposition movement against Gaddafi's regime. And you know, My details of the events are sketchy at best. There's a lot that they just kind of smile and won't tell you about. But they were definitely involved on multiple fronts, you know, trying to get communication into the country. They were comparing their strategies, I guess, of communication versus ours. For example, one of our friend's fathers who has since passed away used to broadcast into the country from different radio signals in the surrounding region.
And pirate radios.
Pirate
radio,
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And would have his signal blocked by the government and would just pick up another signal. And you know, they had strategies like that. There were definitely other strategies that I'm not privy to that they were involved in. But, you know, they were very organized. They had a very clear goal. And one of the things that was really unique about that movement is that it was purely political to bring change for the better to the country. Any religious affiliation, any level of, you know, there was no other unifying
agenda.
Factor. There was no other agenda. Anybody could be a part of it as long as they were with this one goal of
it
trying to bring down the Gaddafi regime.
Gaddafi's band.
Yeah. Gaddafi's band, get him out of the country. Exactly.
So how are they feeling watching what's happening now?
You know, it's kind of a resurgence probably of optimism. I feel like a lot of that generation sort of not gave up, but you know, they got older and there wasn't much they could do anymore, and they tried and had not been able to succeed in the past few decades. And you know, they had lives now and they had families and had established themselves in this country and in Europe and other places. And so I feel like, I mean, for all of us, and I can't even imagine for them, but for all of us, this is something that was unimaginable. I mean, if Tunisia was unimaginable and if Egypt was, you know, earth-shattering, Libya was just leaps and bounds beyond that. It was something that even in our wildest dreams we couldn't have conceived. So I can only imagine for people that grew up with him in power and have spent decades trying to get him out, this just must feel surreal.
So you are dedicating some of your time and energy to gathering and publishing firsthand information about the political unrest in Libya. Tell us exactly what you're doing and what that Twitter feed at Feb17Voices is.
Sure. We had expectations that something was going to happen in Libya. There had been calls for Day of Rage on February 17th, which is why the Twitter feed has that name. We were actually caught off guard because the protesting started a couple of days before that, after the arrest of a lawyer representing the families of the Abu Slim prison massacre in the eastern part of the country. So we sort of knew that something was going to happen, or were hoping that something was going to happen. We weren't mobilizing it, but in the event that it did happen, we wanted to make sure to be prepared to get that information out. We knew that the Gaddafi regime was brutal. We knew that they had total control of the communications in the country, and we knew that it was going to be very difficult for the outside media to cover what was happening. It's not like Egypt, where Cairo itself is a regional hub for journalists. There are not outside journalists in Libya, and hadn't been at the time that the uprising began. So with Egypt, there was a Jan 25 Voices Twitter feed, and the man who started that got in contact with us, sort of offering his advice and support about how we should start our own. And with him, we started the feed, where basically we call into the country, record firsthand eyewitness accounts of what's happening, and post it to Twitter, and offer, you know, descriptions of what they're saying, and offer translations if they're in Arabic. We also have simultaneous feeds of Al Jazeera Arabic translated on our feed for people who might want to see their coverage but, you know, are not Arabic speakers. So we're just trying to make sure that the information gets out of the country, and now that there are people following it, like Al Jazeera Arabic, translate what they're finding.
And we have an audio example to play. This is something that you guys posted yesterday on the feed with translation into English. The source is in Tripoli.
You know, this morning, around dawn, sound of heavy shooting lasted for like 3 consecutive hours. Gunfire that was really heavy. The bangs were really heavy. A lot. A whole lot. You'd say it was right next to us. There was the sound of airplanes. Maybe a helicopter passed, but I didn't see. I only heard them. For 3 hours, heavy shooting, and it wasn't celebratory. There's something going on, and they are trying to cover it up.
Audio from the at Feb17 Voices Twitter feed, and my guest is on the media producer, Sarah Abdurrahman, who is joining us not in that capacity, but as a Libyan American who has been working to get information out of that country. So you're calling people, recording their eyewitness accounts of what happened on the ground like that, translating and then posting them on the Twitter feed. Have you been verifying these eyewitness accounts and making sure that your sources are reliable? Because people can say anything, as you well know, as an on-the-media producer.
It's definitely difficult. This is a question that we've gotten a lot since we started the feed. You know, how do you know that it's true? How do you know it's not exaggerated? How can you confirm it? And, you know, in an ideal world, we would have multiple phone numbers of people who were not afraid to speak, who were willing to be recorded, who were there on the ground, who could confirm everything that we were hearing. But it's not an ideal world. So, I mean, we just have to use our judgment. There are times that we record information and we don't put it on there because it's suspicious. If we have an outlier of one person saying, you know, this and this and this is happening in the city, and every single other person that we have said is denying that that's happening, we would hold back on posting that. You know, it's a police state, and in a police state like that, there's a lot of manipulation of information, and so, you know, we would hesitate if there was, for example, somebody who was trying to spread more government propaganda and trying to infiltrate our communication outlets to get that out. There were suspicions that this happened on Al Jazeera Arabic in the first few days of the uprising, where some of the reports were wildly exaggerated about things happening on the ground, about planes dropping bombs. And all of the people that we spoke with said that there were no planes dropping bombs. There were planes, but nobody had seen bombs. So, you know, we have to be careful not to exaggerate events, because that continues to play into the atmosphere of fear that Gaddafi is trying to create in the country. At this point, he's very limited in the amount of loyalists that he has and the amount of people willing to do his dirty work. So if you have a combination of very few heavily armed people in strategic points in the country and in Tripoli, combine that with exaggerated reports that are meant to scare people from leaving their houses, that's going to make it a lot easier for him to hold the city. So we're very careful not to post anything that we think is just trying to to reinforce that state of fear. At the same time, we do call multiple people that are not connected with each other and don't know each other and try to get
verified
information. But it's difficult, and everything that we post has to come with a disclaimer. We're not working in a region where there's just a constant outpouring of information. So we're going to take what we can get and let the listeners decide.
Listeners, if you want to talk to Sarah, we have a few minutes for phone calls that we would not otherwise have had. But since we're pledge-free today, we can add some phone calls to this segment. 212-433-WNYC. Any other Libyan Americans happen to be listening right now, call us and tell us what you might be hearing from friends and family in Libya, or perhaps how you're using the @Feb17 Voices Twitter feed. 212-433-WNYC. Our on-air line, 212-433-9692. Or anyone else with a question or comment, 212-433-9692. You've also been translating Al Jazeera Arabic, and you told us off the air that Al Jazeera Arabic's coverage is different from Al Jazeera English. How so?
From what I can tell, it seems like maybe their coverage is a little bit more extensive, just in that it tends to be on longer. There was a time where Al Jazeera English had it on pretty much all day, every day for a few days, but Al Jazeera Arabic tends to have a little bit more continuous coverage. The other thing is that they get certain, you know, callers and people in that are only Arabic speakers that they wouldn't get on Al Jazeera English. And sometimes those are more important people, former members of the regime, for example. And so those comments that they make on air are worth transcribing in real time for people to still be up to date.
Do they take a different tone or even political slant than in English?
Not from what I can tell, but I don't know if I would be the best person to judge that. My Arabic itself is very limited, so it's hard for me to tell how different the coverage is. But it seems like they're doing a pretty fair job on both sides of the spectrum.
Let me take a phone call for you. Jason in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jason.
Hey, good morning. Actually, if you go to the Al Jazeera website, there's actually an article, very interesting article, on media control in the United States. It's called Who Rules America? And basically what the crux of the article is that the media corporations here in the United States tend to heavily, tendentiously biased reporting with regard to media events in the Middle East, and basically that the United States tends to use political figures in the Middle East to their own ends. To make a long story short, I was just curious, to what extent is there a perception among your Libyan compatriots as well as the wider Arabic population here in the United States and in New York City specifically, that there is a possibility that Muammar Gaddafi could be replaced by a puppet figure, much like Mubarak, or
a U.S. puppet. Right. Mossadegh, the former dictator of Iran. How about that? Or really the Shah is who you're referring to. But go ahead.
Well, so far the uprising has been internal. It's been mobilized by people there on the ground and hasn't really had any foreign intervention from what we can tell. Who knows what's happening behind the scenes. But I think that if the Libyan people themselves are able to succeed, and we hope and believe that they will be able to succeed in taking him down, then they will be able to choose who leads the country from then on, and hopefully it won't be a puppet. I mean, what the provisional government in Benghazi right now was calling for is for a democracy, for elections, for people to have a representative government, and if they're successful in following through on what they've started, then you know we hope that that's not the case.
Let's take another call. Lamar in Woodhaven, you're on WNYC. Hello, Lamar.
Oh, hello. Good day. Great show, as usual. I just had a real quick question. I was, with regards to the Libyan conflict, I heard a lot of reports of African mercenaries being used, and I've also heard a lot of criticism in terms of the accuracy of reporting in that regard and the destructive ability it has to, you know, foment racial hatred between, I guess, black Africans and people of Arab descent. So I just was curious of your guest if there's been any kind of clarification to the degree that black African mercenaries have been used in the conflict. And I'll take my answer off here. Thank you very much for your call.
We have gotten confirmation that non-Libyan mercenaries have been used in the conflict. Now, it should be noted that there are black Libyans. So it doesn't mean that if there is a black soldier fighting at Libyans that they're not Libyan themselves. When they say African mercenaries, they're talking about mercenaries from sub-Saharan Africa, Africa mercenaries that don't speak Arabic. A lot of them that they've found, they said, spoke French, for example. But they've also said that there were other foreign mercenaries not from Africa. We've heard stories of mercenaries from Eastern Europe. We've heard stories of mercenaries from elsewhere. Yes, there have been accounts of mercenaries. It's very, very difficult to confirm what the percentage of Libyans shooting at other Libyans is versus foreign hired help shooting at other Libyans. Now, in terms of the stigmatism towards Africans in the country, one thing that has been very powerful that has come out of this conflict, among the many, many moving elements of people, you know, taking charge in their country, in the regions of the country that have also already been freed, you know, people kind of taking ownership in a place that they never cared before to have ownership, cleaning up the streets, directing traffic, working together on committees, really helping, banding together and taking care of each other. And one of the things that's emerged, and we've seen videos of this, is actually trying to defend the captured mercenaries. We've seen people throw their bodies over the captured mercenaries to make sure that the angry crowds, and rightfully angry, they're being shot at and defenseless, to make sure that the angry crowds don't take it out on them. Because really, Gaddafi is exploiting people on both sides. There's nobody who's going to go into another country and shoot to kill unless they themselves are coming from desperate situations. And so he's really exploiting the most difficult situations for people on all ends of the spectrum. And another thing that he wants to do is create another conflict. So he tries to create conflicts between East and West of Libya. He tries to create conflicts between the diaspora and the people in the country. He tries to create conflicts between the light-skinned and the dark-skinned Libyans. And so one of the things that he's threatened is, look at how people are going to, you know, treat the people from the south versus the people from the north. Mm. And so we're just really trying not to buy into that. Yeah. Of course, there are people that are going to, you know, be affected by it. But at the same time, we're seeing really amazing examples of humanity where they're protecting people. And there was one video that went viral where they showed a dead mercenary being carried in the eastern part of the country. And it's in Arabic, so a lot of people might not realize, but what they were saying is, be careful, he's still a soul in the end, he's still a soul. So there's humanity there.
The
I mean, in the movement, not in the leadership.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with On the Media producer Sarah Abdurrahman, not here in that role, but as a Libyan-American who's been working to get information out of her family's homeland. And Jan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I was wondering, from the people you know and from what you've read, what is the attitude of Americans doing a no-fly zone?
I think a lot of people would be very open to that. I mean, we have to be very careful here. So far, this revolution has been started by the people, for the people, and they've been able to get as far as they have on their own. Just last night, we had a call from somebody who had made it to Ras Lanuf. And he's simultaneously so happy and free in his voice and simultaneously, you know, in shock that he's even still alive, saying, you know, they're shooting at us from planes. I mean, he said that 10 times, from planes, you know. We've got nothing and they're shooting at us from planes. He's like swearing to us up and down that he shouldn't even be alive anymore. And they don't want troops to come in. They don't want people to come and fight the battle for them. But at a minimum, level the playing field. I mean, you have people, the people that have managed to repel the Gaddafi forces in the east, they started off with rocks. They didn't start off with guns. They have guns now. They have guns that they took from the Gaddafi forces. But they started off with nothing. And they're really, I mean, they're using themselves, their own bodies, you know, as weapons.
So here is Senator John McCain on television yesterday, on ABC This Week, supporting the idea of a no-fly zone and also talking about what else the U.S. might do.
Ground intervention would not be appropriate, certainly not at this time. A ground intervention by the part of the United States could be very counterproductive, but we can assist in a lot of ways for humanitarian intelligence, providing them with some training and other things that we could do.
So all those things you would tend to be for, too, intelligence and training.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things, first of all, is to recognize the provisional government in Benghazi. Internationally, it seems that there are not many people that recognize Gaddafi's legitimacy anymore. Not that he ever had legitimacy. He never had a mandate from the people to run that country. So if people en masse around the world are saying, you know, he's not a legitimate ruler, let's work with the people that are trying to establish legitimacy. So there's a provisional government, you know, they have committees formed. They are, you know, trying to ensure that they can establish civil society in the east and also free the western region of the country. And everybody that we speak to in the east, everybody that we speak to says that we are not done until Tripoli is also free. And it, the provisional government is in Benghazi now, obviously, because it's a liberated area. But they have established in their statements that they've sent out, they've established that the capital remains in Tripoli. This is a temporary thing. Mm-hmm. And again, they're trying to show the unity that Gaddafi is trying to squash by saying, you know, there's going to be the country's going to be broken up into three different countries and this and that nonsense.
We're out of time. Just tell people how they can continue to follow what you've been doing. Just go to Twitter and follow the @Feb17Voices
yes,
feed.
Yes, @Feb17Voices. If you just want the audio and not any of the other stuff around it, you can go to audioboo.com/Feb17Voices. That's where we put up all of the audio and you can hear all of the accounts. And we have more coming. So,
Sarah Abdurrahman, usually a producer for WNYC's On the Media. I'll see you around the office.
Thank you.
Good luck with this. It's clear how passionate you are about this and how hard you're working for the liberation of your country. Thank you for coming on with
us. Thank you so much for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and I should really say for your family's country. This is your country. but Brian Lehrer on WNYC. The New York Times executive editor, Bill Keller, next. Stay tuned.